Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh,
you're in the madhouse now.
If you hear this sound, that means this episode is also featured on our YouTube channel as a video. Head over to www.youtube.com/keepitweirdpodcast to check it out.
Warning, this episode contains foul language and mentions of miscarriage and suicide.
Between. We are the luckiest gals in the galaxy because each week we get together and talk about something weird. And we are back on our bullshit this week after a brief hiatus to investigate a house that bleeds, dive into a past life in ancient Egypt, answer some strange questions, and sing along with another cursed freaking crooner. How many curses can there be? Everyone needs to just stop singing. No more
never.
Songs.
Never.
So grab some noise-canceling headphones and grab a mop and a bucket, because this week is going to get messy. My name is Ashley, and this is my lovely co-host, Lauren.
Hello, weirdos. So happy to be back. I was going to say, when you said grab a bucket and a mop, you were just like, oh, it's about to get messy. But I can only hear the song WAP, W-A-P, because she's like, grab a bucket and a mop. That's a WAP, WAP, WAP. That's a wet, wet ass. You know the word. Anyway, so that's what I thought you were going to say. I thought you were going to jump right into that song. I was incorrect. But anyway, that's where my head's at.
I didn't know that that was the lyric to the song WAP. I think I've only actually heard the song WAP like maybe twice in my life, surprisingly. Like, I just sort of missed it.
We had different TikTok for you pages.
A lot of discourse, okay? Mm-hmm. A lot of people talking about it. People were happy, and some people were happy. Anyway, hi.
Anywho, hi. Hello.
That we missed an episode. Sometimes life comes in with a left hook right to the chin and knocks you on your ass. And
as 2023 has liked to do. Yes. Thank you for having grace with us.
Each month of this lovely year has done to us. But you know what I realized? Especially this time, for some reason, these episode-less weeks are a super big eye-opener for me, because sometimes, like, when we're in the thick of our seasons, we're churning out episodes, I think to myself, like, there's no way I can keep doing this podcast, like, with a job on top of it. It's so much work. Right. I'm so stressed. I can't get it all done all the time. And then we take a few weeks off, and my anxiety and my depression get so out of control. Because I have no structure and I have too much time to...
Too much time on your hands.
About things.
That
and then I'm like, oh
so
yeah, I
real.
Can never quit the podcast. It's literally a part of my mental health regimen.
Truly. I told Ashley when we were gearing up for recording and, you know, going back and forth about our topics and whatnot, I said, I'm so excited to record with you. It is like a version of therapy on top of my actual therapy, which is very needed. But I, anytime we don't have this podcast, there is something missing. And I feel the same way. There's like a little bit of an out of control feeling where I'm like, oh, I need this. I need to talk about weird ass things with one of my best friends in the world. And it will help so much. And last week, I do think the break was needed because I was in like nervous breakdown status. However,
territory.
By the end of last week, I was like, okay, I am very ready to talk to Ashley again and I need it. So I'm very happy to be here.
Me too. And that is also a little thank you to our mental health warriors out there. I know a lot of you have expressed to us how much the show helps with your mental health. And that's always a really lovely compliment to receive. So just know that it helps with our mental health too, like just as much. So we're all in this together. We're all, we need the weird.
We need
long live, keep it weird. Mm,
that was beautiful.
And I do think that's a really good point in time to say donate to our Patreon to help us out, because I'm not sure if you know this, I've done this math, but if all of our listeners, if everyone who listened to our show every week donated $1 a month, I could do this full time and not have a day job on top of it.
Okay. Did everybody hear that? I'm going to need you to reach into your pockets. Let's go.
$1.
$1.
Half of our listeners donated $5 a month, literally the cost of a cup of coffee, I would be able to do this full time and not have a day job. So please consider that if you are a regular listener of our show.
Then we could churn out things regularly.
Dude, like, truly. I could turn out so much more stuff. Like, when I promise.
Because you wouldn't have the day job. You'd be like, I will edit.
I'll actually have a new shirt design. Yeah.
She can design. She can edit. She can do it all. I was going to say, I'll quit my job. And I was like, A, I really actually enjoy teaching preschoolers, which I know is strange. And two, Ashley needs the time. She's the one who needs to quit the day job. Give her this moment because she's a master producer and editor and recorder. She's just a podcaster.
I would like to produce more shows too. Like that was that always too. A dream that You've I could always do said this that. And then start another show that was more like, you know, about like spiritual wellness and stuff. Like I've always wanted to do that, but I can't do it until I start, you know, making a little money. So, but
think about
the
it.
Point I'm making is those little dollars, those little dineros, they add up and change the lives of people who make your content. So an enormous thank you to the patrons we do have, and a little nudge to those of you who are on the fence about, you know, donating to your favorite shows. So, okay, we're going to get into it. Right in the weird. First up. We need more cowbell. It's time for Don't Fear the Reaper. Listen, reincarnation is real, okay? It's real, guys. And this lady may have been the proof to our pudding. Mm. Her name is Dorothy. And I think, me too, that was my grandma's name.
Oh, and she did not such go a good by grandma
Dot.
Name.
Every time I tell people her name was Dorothy, they're so like, Dot? And I'm like, no, that's Dorothy. Cute, but no, never.
There's a Dottie never at Wilder anyway. School because her name is Dorothy, and I think it's so Dottie. Cute because, like, you never meet three-year-olds named Dorothy anymore, so little Dottie. Anyhow.
Dottie. Oh, God, that's such a cute name. Anyway, so we mentioned her, I think, on our reincarnation episode ages ago, but I wanted to do a deep dive on her because I think she's super fucking cool. So, Dorothy Louise Edie. She has the oldest name I've ever heard.
That is so
Dorothy Louise Edie was born on January 16th, 1904 in London. Her parents were fairly wealthy, and aside from being a little rich English girl, her life was very normal until she was 3 years old and fell down a set of stairs and died.
Oh. Wait, how old?
Fully dead, three.
Oh, fully she was dead. A three-year-old Dorothy. Okay.
Declared dead by a doctor. It was horrific. Okay. But then she started breathing again. And within an hour, she was literally fine, playing on her bed, no sign of injury, except for she had like a tender bump on her head. She was fine.
Okay, sure. Great.
It's a miracle. We all move on. But shortly after the accident, she began having recurring dreams of being in a building with huge columns and a garden filled with fruits and flowers. And she would often cry to her mother saying she wanted to go home and refuse to accept that she was already home. The strange behavior amped up to fucking 11 after her parents took her to the British Museum one afternoon. When they made it to the Egyptian galleries, she started running through the displays, kissing the feet of the statues, saying, "These are my people," and refusing to leave the museum.
No.
Once she started to read books, she became absolutely obsessed with Egyptian history. And even at 6, directly after she learned to fluently read English, she told her parents that hieroglyphics was actually the language she wanted to learn. Like, that was the language that was familiar to her. And she used to know how to read it, but she doesn't remember how. Like, it was genuinely frustrating to her that she would look at, like, hieroglyphics. And, like she told her parents at 6 years old that she at one time knew what it said.
Wow.
When she was 7, she saw an old she saw a photo of the Temple of Seti in Abydos, Egypt, and she had like a mini breakdown. She was screaming, "This was my home. This is where I lived. Why is it all broken? Where's the garden?" She spent more and more time at the Egyptian galleries at the British Museum, and when she was 11 years old, she was noticed by the eminent Egyptologist, E.A. Wallace Budge, who worked for the British Museum, and he agreed to work with her and teach her how to read hieroglyphics, and she learned really fast at age 11.
Dang.
How to read Egyptian hieroglyphs.
Casual, again. Casual. It's totally fine, as all children do. Okay. Mm-hmm.
At age 14, she started having what seemed to be visions, like the way she described it. It was like waking dreams of Seti the First, whom she had seen photos of prior and claimed to know him personally. But she started having like visions of him, waking dreams of him in like her bedroom and like at school.
Whoa. Wow.
She also started having more recurring dreams of her, what seemed to be a past life. In one, she and other Egyptian women and girls were laying on mats in an enormous room while an old man carrying a lamp walked through to make sure that they were all where they were supposed to be. In another, she was being interrogated and beaten by a high priest over what? She wasn't sure. Moving on to her adult life, this was all just shit that happened in her childhood. Moving on to her adult life, when she was 27 years old, she married an Egyptian student named Imam and obtained her Egyptian citizenship and moved to Egypt, which is where she always said she wanted to live. She wanted to live in Egypt, obviously. Where else?
No surprise. Yep.
While living there, she would wake up in the middle of the night and write in hieroglyphics the memories that she'd dream about or the message that she'd receive from a being that she was calling Hora. H-O-R-R-A. Two words. Okay. Eventually, over the course of one entire year of writing these hieroglyphic journals, she had been given what she believes to be a full picture of her past life. And it was so detailed. This is what she remembers or like was saw in her dreams. Her name was Benthrashite, meaning harp of joy. She was born to a soldier in a vegetable seller. After her mother died, her father couldn't afford her, and she was placed in the Temple of Kam el-Sultan, where she was raised as a priestess. When she was 12, she was given the choice to leave the temple, go out into the world, basically on her own, or take the vows of a priestess, which are basically it's like nunhood. Like, she'd be considered a consecrated virgin married only to Osiris. So just like, you know, the Catholic nuns are married to God. They never have sex. Same deal. Only
right. Okay.
Osiris. Obviously, she took the vows and stayed because what the fuck else was she supposed to do? She's a 12-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when she was living in the palace as this, you know, priestess, this nun, she was noticed by the young king Seti, who was visiting the temple. They had a short little affair. Mm-hmm. And she got pregnant. And when she was found to be pregnant, she was interrogated by the high priest and beaten when she refused to answer who the father was. Eventually, she confessed that her lover had been the king, and she killed herself to spare him the embarrassment of a public trial. Lord,
What? My Lanta. So, okay.
All of that is fascinating, but also just like something someone says. So here's like
sure.
the stuff that makes you go like, oh, fuck, was she reincarnated?
I mean, I'm already thinking that, but yeah, bring me some more. Bring me some more evidence.
With that information, she was determined to see her old home in the temple and see if she felt anything or remembered anything more. Edie and her husband divorced in 1936, and she moved to a village near the Giza pyramids with her son, who she did name Seti, after the king that she had almost had a child.
Interesting. Okay, pretty convicted by that truth. All right, there we go.
She ended up finding work with the Egyptian Department of Antiquities, who were not buying what she was selling at first, but eventually it became hard to deny her depth of knowledge on Egyptian history. At first, she was just sort of like an assistant. She would participate in digs. She would make copies of artwork and writing small papers. And eventually, she worked her way up in her life working with the leaders in the field of Egyptology. And finally, in 1952, she was allowed her first visit to Abydos and the temple that Seti had built. And as she walked in, she knew it back to front. The chief inspector of the Egyptian Department of Antiquities wanted to test her and see if she could answer questions that, like, no one would possibly know without having been there before. And she did.
Oh my god. She knew
where things were.
Passed with flying colors. She was able to
locate flying colors. Like, this guy was like, I don't know how she did it. Like, she was able to locate specific scenes depicted on the wall murals, even in pitch darkness. She was able to say, well, that scene's over here, and, like, this is what's written out over here. And granted, like, okay, sure, maybe she found a way to study all of this stuff outside. Maybe. Let's just say.
Okay. Sure.
But then she went to, like, the back, and she was able to pinpoint the former location of the garden she remembered, where a later dig revealed that there was a garden there.
They did not know there was a garden there. Yep. Everyone was probably like, why does she keep mentioning this garden that she knew about? She was talking
about that garden fucking 40 years earlier.
That's really wild.
The discovery of this garden also led to the discovery of a tunnel running under the temple, and the lead inspector said that her help was indispensable for archaeological work on the Abydos site. She read hieroglyphs as well as most experts without any formal education. She remained in Abydos for the rest of her life, helping with archaeological work, translating ancient texts and art. And later in life, she did work as a tour guide when she was, like, super old. And actually, they had, like, a maximum age. Like, they had a mandatory retirement age. And of all the people that worked there, she was the only one that was allowed to keep working after the mandatory retirement age.
Because
they were like, she's invaluable.
Like, she has all the knowledge that we need. Invaluable. Let her work forever. Yeah, she can work until she is 101 years old because it's time. Wow. She
made significant contributions to the study of ancient Egypt and remained there until her death at 77 in April of 1981. And she was buried in the desert near a local cemetery. And I saw some people saying, like, even though, like, she contributed all of this stuff to to Egyptology and ancient studies and blah, 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 she's in an unmarked grave. But I saw a picture of, like, her headstone. So I don't know what they mean by unmarked grave. Because she
has a headstone. A tombstone, yeah. Like a headstone.
Like, it's one of the flat ones. Okay. It just, like, sits on the ground. It's not one of fancy ones, but, like, I don't know.
It's like, that's marked to me, but I don't know. Okay.
So Dorothy Eady is known throughout the woo-woo community as one of the most profound and legitimate cases of reincarnation. But obviously, outside of the woo-woo community, skeptics abound. And, but even the skeptics, even the people that are like, I don't believe in that, are like, it's hard to deny that something very special, like, or interesting was going on with her.
Yes. Like, you can't, there's no way around it. You have to look at it and say, okay, I hear you. I'm a skeptic too, but, where's our evidence? Where's our backing? Because I'm running out of things to say when this seems so legit.
Yeah, like someone had said, like, well, all the stuff that happened in her life, like, we just have to take her word for it. And it's like, well, yeah, there wasn't a historian following her around from the age of 4 right. to verify that all this, this is just the stuff that she was
1,000%.
Like, you know, this is how it developed. And like, this is, anyways, no Egyptologists publicly subscribed to the notion that she might be reincarnated, but none of them doubted her sincerity, and many have used her observations and discoveries and work as reliable source material. And she never ever tried to convert anyone or make anyone believe her claims. She just also wasn't shy about explaining how she knew the things she did. Basically, like, hey,
yeah,
this is how I know. If you don't believe in that, I don't know what to tell you. By the way, I can lead you to secret tunnels you didn't even know existed. Follow me.
Right. Like, yeah.
I don't know.
Follow me now. Yeah.
So
that is wild.
Dorothy Edie, maybe, possibly, reincarnated Egyptian priestess.
And by maybe, possibly, if you're me, I say 100% definitely 100%, she was reincarnated. But, you know, to each their own.
It's funny because when I guess I didn't know what a priestess was, because before I did research on her, actually, she's in the latest, there's a little bitty blurb on her, a little segment on her in the latest season of The Unexplained with William Shatner.
Mm-hmm.
So when they were talking about it, and they're like, she said she was, you know, a reincarnated priestess. I was like, they're always priestesses and princesses and goddesses. And then I found out what a priestess was in ancient Egypt. And I was like, oh, that's actually like, not a fantastical thing to be. Yeah.
Not put up on the throne yeah. at all.
I thought
so
of like,
she's claiming
I
that.
Thought when she said priestess, she was like on the high court of.
Yeah. Which is a fair assumption because priestess sounds very official.
It sounds
and
super
very
official.
Royal.
It was just a nun.
Just a big old nun. All right. Just a nun. Well, I love that story. I just like things like that are what keep me going because our reincarnation episode was so fun discussing all the theories and throwing it all out there and like how fascinating it can all be. But she just has so much evidence of actually being reincarnated.
Speaking of, who? I have to get something for you. So do you remember when Amy Goldenberg described to me the woman she saw sitting on my couch, and it was yes. like the same as the woman I saw sitting on my couch. And she yes. was like, she had her hair high up in a bun and she had like a high collar. Mm-hmm. Hold one second. Hold on. BRB.
Can't decide if this is going to be the worst thing that's ever happened to me, but.
Looky here. Look at that bitch.
Oh, my God. It's identical to what you both described.
That's her.
There she blows. There she fucking blows. Okay, well, that's who was hanging out on your couch.
I'm pretty sure her name is...
End of story.
Her name is Emma. And she's my great auntie. And I'm pretty goddamn sure that is exactly the person I saw on my couch that one time.
I'm pretty goddamn sure. I feel like that's exactly who you both described separately, and Amy didn't even know who you had been seeing, right, at that time?
No, I had never told anyone.
No. Right. Yeah. Okay, well.
Yeah. So that's special.
There she
is. I want to learn more about her. I don't know anything about her. I just have these old photos that my dad got printed.
Which are so cool,
are
by
so
the way.
So cool.
It's so special to have that.
My you know, great ancestors, but fuck.
Oh my goodness.
Founder.
Well, there she is.
At least I have a name.
I know.
Now
Emma.
Maybe I can research her. But
thought
that
you can
was
find out more and then say, hey, Emma, if you ever see her again.
Yeah.
That is special.
Well, especially if she's like revealed herself to me, I feel like there might be a connection there.
I think so, too.
We'll see.
And maybe you're going to find out more and be like, oh, my gosh, we would have been best friends.
We would have been BFFs. I'd be like, she was known in the township as a witch. And I'd be like, Emma.
Hello. Emma, my girl.
I knew it.
I knew it all along. Oh, okay. Well, Moving on to, as Ashley said, I can't believe yet another cursed crooner right here. Beware of ballads that can invade your brain. Make no mistake of the melodies that cause pain. Tune out the tunes that cause you to quiver. Hymns that haunt are sure to send a shiver. Cursed crooners and spooky songs, crooked covers and scary sing-alongs, cold courses and sordid sonnets, crazy canters and sinful soloists, cursed crooners and spooky songs. Cursed crooners, spooky songs. And today is specifically a cursed crooner. Sort of, there's some songs involved, but this is a cursed musician, which I feel like mostly this season we've been doing
cursed songs.
So, yes. Have you heard of the Buddy Holly curse, Ashley?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So have I, but I didn't know all the details of it. But I just have heard people be like, well, the Buddy Holly curse, you know.
All
and I'm
I know
like,
is like, Buddy Holly died in a plane accident because they didn't put enough gas in the plane. And
oh, my son is crying, but he's in good hands. So I'm not going to give in to that. Don't listen. The Buddy Holly curse. So a listener actually wrote in once we started this new segment and was saying, like, oh my gosh, have you done the Buddy Holly curse? And I was like, no, like, I feel like a lot of people know about it, but, and I could not find this DM, struggling to find DMs lately of people that I want. I was asking Ashley for one recently. If you sent me the DM about Buddy Holly, please write in. I couldn't find it in my personal or the Keep It Weird one. So I'm sorry to not have your name in this moment, but let me know. And I'm so sorry. But I came back and was like, just kidding. I knew nothing about this. So I'm happy that I looked it up. So the curse of Buddy Holly was just more involved than I thought. To start, little summary of Buddy Holly, if there is anyone out there who's like, who, which maybe if we have some
definitely
young listeners,
I think that
it could be
Buddy
who.
Holly is obscure enough that there's probably plenty of people, myself included, who don't know a ton about Buddy Holly. I could tell you what he looks like.
That's true.
I could tell you that Weezer has that great song called Buddy Holly.
Ooh, I look just like Buddy Holly. And that could be most people's knowledge.
Yeah.
So that is fair. So Buddy Holly was this just wildly talented songwriter and performer, charismatic, always looked cool as hell, had like the cool sunglasses on, like just known as being like cool guy, amazing, and also very talented performer and singer-songwriter. So
what is his most popular song?
That'll Be the Day, Peggy Sue, and True Love Ways were some
that'll
of the most popular.
Be the
that'll
day.
Be
yeah, I obviously
well, and
know
then which is creepy. That'll be the day when I die. Interesting.
Coincidence?
Yes. So he had enormous success while just in his 20s, which is also a cool thing to say. And he did have a band called The Crickets, which that was something I didn't know about. Again, I was like, Buddy Holly and The Crickets. but because I just always feel like I heard of Buddy Holly on his own. But no, like Buddy Holly had a lot of success with The Crickets. But then Buddy Holly sets out, I'm solo now. And he goes on this national tour called the Winter Dance Party Tour.
Okay.
Which is the fateful tour that had the plane crash involved in it. He was out. There were some other rock stars on the tour, which I will get to in a little bit. And he wanted to go on this tour, even though it was in the dead of winter, hence why it was called the Winter Dance Party Tour. It was like terrible weather. People were worried about it, but he was like, I have to go because he had a brand new wife and then a child on the way. So he was like, I got to go, got to make some money. So after a performance at the Surf Ballroom on February 3rd, 1959, he had chartered a plane with other musician, the Big Bopper, and also well-known musician Richie Valens to go to the next gig because they were tired of the freezing cold tour bus. And tragically, that plane crashed, killing all three of them. And you can jump more into that plane crash. As Ashley said, she knew more details about it. It did have to do with fuel, but also it had to do with maybe a curse. There is just so much more to the Buddy Holly story. This is the part that I didn't know about because there was a lot of stuff leading up to it. So shortly before embarking on the winter dance party tour, both Buddy Holly and his new wife, Maria Elena, were simultaneously disturbed by violent prophetic dreams.
Yikes.
Maria Elena had dreamt of a fireball descending to earth in the middle of a field, followed by a huge explosion that left a great gaping hole in the ground. When she woke up, she shook Buddy Holly awake, and he woke up out of his dream saying, "I just also had the strangest dream." Mm. He dreamt that he, his wife, and his brother were in a plane, and his brother was persuading Holly to leave Maria Elena and go to the top of this building with the intention of returning to her eventually. I don't know, something along those lines.
Okay.
So reportedly, Holly was racked with guilt for having left her behind in the dream, and she was like reaching out for him on the top of a building. But Maria Elena was supposed to accompany her husband on the winter dance party tour in reality, and he had convinced her to stay behind because of her terrible morning sickness. So, as immediately,
if
like,
you wanna interpret
this is coming to, like,
the dream.
If you're looking for that. Which, yeah, that's, he was starting to feel the guilt a little bit of leaving her behind, but I don't think he was fully diving into the dream, but it was a little weird. Also, while Holly was touring in 1958, this is the year prior, he had received an ominous message from a man named Joe Meek, who was a British recording engineer and producer. And in January of that year, Meek had gone to a tarot reading. Mm-hmm. So, like, we love it. And the message delivered that night was February 3rd. February 3rd. Death and Buddy Holly. They were all connected in some way. So Joe Meek sent Buddy Holly a message saying, like, "I know this sounds crazy, but I feel like you're going to die on February 3rd. But February 3rd, 1958 came and went, and Buddy Holly was totally fine. So he was like,
good thing there's never going to be another February 3rd.
We're good. There's never going to be this date again. And then February 3rd, 1959. We hear about it.
Yikes.
So the winter dance party tour was just plagued with problems anyway, like the plane aside. The tour buses, which was the reason for chartering the plane, continually were breaking down. The heaters refused to work in negative temperatures. I mean, this is January, February. That's brutal. And both the Big Bopper and Richie Valens had taken ill multiple times throughout the tour, and Holly's drummer named Carl Bunch had to leave the tour after he suffered severe frostbite on his feet just from being in the tour bus or like walking and from like walking to the tour bus to venues.
Yeah.
That's how freaking cold it was this winter. And Holly's last song that he released, It Doesn't Matter Anymore, was released just shortly before his death and after the fatal plane crash. Everybody wondered, like, oh, it doesn't matter anymore. That's interesting. Like, did he know something? But I know that's all just, you know, you're piecing things together.
Right.
But very sadly, also Maria Elena, his wife, miscarried the child
Aww.
That she was homesick with, the only child of Buddy Holly, due to the traumatic.
Yeah.
The traumatic plane crash, you know, the trauma. Yeah. The trauma, the distress that all of it caused brought her into miscarrying her child, which is oh so sad. So it was like multiple things were happening on this tour. So along with that, after obviously it is so sad that Buddy Holly passed away on that plane crash, and it's so strange everything that was involved in the tour and leading up to it, but the Big Bopper, who I've been referring to, his name was Giles Perry or JP Richardson. He was on this tour, he was on the plane, he had just released a single called Chantilly Lace, was enjoying the success of it, but he had the flu, and he persuaded Waylon Jennings,
Whoa.
Who you may have heard of, who was also in the backing band of Buddy Holly on this tour, he persuaded him to give up his seat on this plane because he had the flu and was like, I need to be on this plane. You have to go on the freezing cold bus. And he was the oldest person to perish on this plane. The Big Bopper was at age 28. And that's so sad that he was the oldest person to perish. And of course, Waylon Jennings is sitting there like, I cannot believe I gave up my seat, you know, after this, like that could have been me, but also like that fucking sucks. Like, it's just, it's a whole thing. And then Richie Valens, known for La Bamba or O'Donna, was also a member of the Winter Dance Party tour. He was the third person to pass away. And he had also convinced a man named Tommy Alsup, another member of Holly's backup band, to flip a coin for the third seat on that plane. Valens, like the big bopper, was also sick, as I had mentioned before. So he was like, please, I gotta have it. But they still flipped a coin. He called heads and he won. And he even commented, it's the first time that I've ever won anything. And Tommy Alsup, who now is riddled with guilt because of this statement, but said, ugh, I hope your plane crashes. Right before he got on the plane, because he lost. It's rough. And Valens was only 17 at the time of the crash. And Tommy Alsup did open a club in later years called the Heads Up Saloon to commemorate his life-saving coin toss. He tried to look at it in a positive, even though he was like, oh my God. So
yeah, he had survived. There's a lot of that going on.
Then, just to go down the line of how this trickles down, because again, I was like, Buddy Holly curse, how does it affect other people? So that's kind of like the tour and how that was involved. But then we go on to Eddie Cochran and Gene Vincent. Singer Eddie Cochran recorded a song called Three Stars in honor of the performers killed in the plane crash. And Cochran was supposed to have been on the Winter Dance Party tour. And when he heard of the crash, Cochran thought as though he had cheated death and was supposedly plagued by guilt and feared that death would soon come for him for like the rest of his life.
Like a Final Destination situation.
Yes. He's like, it's coming. I know it's coming for me. I'm destinationed, as we said. And on April 17th, 1960, Cochran, his girlfriend and songwriter Sharon Sheely, and another singer, Gene Vincent, as I mentioned before, were on their way to London Heathrow's airport for a return flight to the U.S. And on the way, the Ford console they were riding in blew a tire. Vincent re-injured the knee that had previously been hurt in a motorcycle accident, and he walked with a limp for the rest of his life. Sheely suffered a broken neck and back. Jeez. And Cochran was thrown from the vehicle and rushed to the hospital, where he was visited by the original Crickets from Buddy Holly's band, Jerry, Sonny, and Joe, who were touring in England at the time. But he unfortunately died the next day of massive head injuries at only the age of 22.
I mean, maybe he was destinationed.
That's what I'm saying. And the last single released by Cochran was called Three Steps to Heaven. Just like, what? How? And the Crickets were the backing band for the single.
Three Steps to Heaven has no relation, though, to the three stars of whatever, the song that he sang about the...
No.
Yeah, okay.
That was different. Three Steps to Heaven is different, which is wild. But also, like, he wrote a song about it. He felt destinationed by it because he was supposed to be on the tour. It's like the Buddy Holly curse was following him in some way.
Yeah.
Oh, and then Vincent would die in 1971 of internal bleeding from a ruptured stomach ulcer. He was only 36, and his family lacked sufficient funds, and the city of Los Angeles had to bury him because they had no other choice. So that's just a sad ending to the story. And he was already walking with a limp, and it's all just crazy. Then there is a singer named Ronnie Smith. Ronnie Smith was hired to replace Buddy Holly for the remainder of the Winter Dance Party tour because they were like, we have all these shows booked. The show must go on. He joined Waylon Jennings, Tommy Alsup, and Carl Bunch. And the band later recorded all together as The Jitters. And Ronnie Smith was committed to a state hospital in Texas for drug abuse. And on October 25th, 1962, just a couple of years later, he ended up hanging himself in one of the bathrooms in this rehabilitation hospital. And he was age 24. So everyone is passing away at a very young age. It's crazy. And the list actually goes on, and all the stories kind of become the same. So you are welcome to look into it. I don't want to take up too much time just going down the list, but there are at least 10 more musicians that I have on here. Oh, and also along with it, not even the deaths, but just some of the connections he had to other musicians. I know there were some Beatles connections. I think George Harrison had something involved with Buddy Holly that, like, I think George Harrison at one point was like, I can't even do anything involved with Buddy Holly music because it has affected me so deeply. So there's all kinds of things going on in connection to Buddy Holly songs, to Buddy Holly tours, people became terrified of the music and didn't know how to be involved with his legacy because they were scared of death and how it might take them too early. But it's kind of wild when you spell it all out, as much as we don't want to believe that it's a curse and it's just life. Anyone who was connected to him, especially in kind of that like 5 to 6 years after the plane crash, it's kind of insane.
Yeah.
How many people passed away or had family members pass away.
I don't even think it's a curse. The vibe I got from it was that the event, the plane crash, was like a significant marker in history. And whether or not the plane crashed and they died was going to send time into a certain direction. Because to me, it seemed like with the prophetic dreams, the tarot card reading, there were some forces at work trying to prevent this from happening. Because why else?
Yep.
Why else would you be like warned? And I guess, you know, it kind of depends on how you look at it. Because I always go back and forth on this too, where it's like, you're not necessarily being warned that something's going to happen. It's just that time is crazy and we don't understand it. And everything that has happened and will happen is happening at once. So, of course, a premonition of your death.
You're experiencing it in your dream. Yeah.
So if you look at it that way, it's nothing. And maybe it is a curse. Mm-hmm. But or possibly that was the situation where, like, this plane crash has to happen in order for XYZ to happen in the future, which could be fucking 100 years, 1,000 years down the line. Or we have to stop this plane crash from happening to prevent XYZ from happening 100 years, 1,000 years down the line. And it seems like it happened, and the people that were supposed to be on there got taken care of. They got destinationed. So, like,
they got
maybe it wasn't necessarily a curse as much as it was, you know, time fixing its little problem that it had.
Yep. Time was like, well, wait a minute. Like, I still have to make this happen. So let me catch up. I know. It does sound a little bit like that. It's just crazy. Yeah. Some people were destinationed, as we talked about on our Friday the 13th episode, where it's like, listen, I'm going to get to you somehow.
Yeah.
I'm coming
for you regardless. And you can either die now or you can, you know, come close to death 50 times and then die anyway. What would you like?
Which one are you choosing?
Yeah, which one are you choosing? That's crazy.
Ooh.
What?
I was like, I just wanted to make sure I'm looking through the deaths, because I was like, there's a lot to read and they do become similar. But one worth mentioning is Meek, the man who called him about the tarot reading and was like, it's the third. He suffered horribly after the plane crash from rage, paranoia, depression.
Yikes.
Then, like, you know, fell into drug abuse. Like, just life went downhill. I think he was so haunted by it. And he became obsessed with Buddy Holly, and he said Buddy visited him in his dreams. And on the 8th anniversary of Holly's death, February 3rd, 1967, Meek shot and killed his landlady before turning the shotgun on himself at age 37. Haunted by this dream. I know. I was like, I know that's so depressing, but I had to throw it in there because he was the one that was like, February 3rd.
Yeah, it's just wasn't wild just that, like, a throwaway it took thing over that his happened. Life. Like, he was like, no, I was given this message. I passed it along. Like, was I supposed to do more? Was I supposed to, like, really stress to him to never get on a fucking plane on the 3rd of February? Or I guess he didn't hear about the plane. It was just death, Buddy Holly, February 3rd. Stay home.
Right. He didn't know it was going to be a plane crash. But yeah, I was just like, this is going to be a rough day. I definitely wouldn't get on an airplane if somebody had told me about February 3rd.
No.
Like, I would be like, nope, that's what's going to do it.
You know, I guess just death is not enough information. Like, if I was in that tarot card reading, I'd be like, pull another card and tell him, give me some, like, hints as to what death
could
be. Because... Yeah.
Correct.
Am I going to die in my sleep?
I need
answers. Am I going to get murdered?
Right.
Either way, February 3rd would be my vacation day. Every single year, I would stay home. Yeah,
I'm snoozing. I'm hanging out in my living room.
But again, if it is a destination situation, then, you know, your toaster's going to explode and shoot shrapnel into your neck, and then your house is going to catch on fire, and you're going to burn alive. Like the teacher did in Final Destination. Spoilers. Sorry. But also not sorry.
Also not sorry at all. come on.
Okay. Well, this next segment was cut from our haunted house episode. I had prepared a segment just in case we needed some sort of filler. Yep. But gosh, we sure didn't. That was one of my favorite episodes from the entire year.
Yeah, it's so, so good. But I'm pumped.
But I had this little ditty left over. I had to share it with you. So
follow me. It's time to take a trip to the astral plane into a paranormal paradise.
Here we go. All right.
This took place in Atlanta, Georgia in 1987. And this is hilarious. It was a foggy Tuesday night in September, much like this one, is what my notes say, because we recorded on a Tuesday in September.
That is so. Here we are in November, Tuesday in November.
It's been a while. So this took place at 1114 Fountain Drive, a house occupied by William and Minnie Clyde Winston, who had lived there for over two decades at the time. William was 79 and Minnie was 77. They had raised three children, all adults, all off living their adult lives by this foggy Tuesday night. William, or Willie, as they called him, was actually in pretty poor health. His kidneys were bad. He had to undergo dialysis regularly. He was very frail and basically never left his bed or his dialysis machine, especially not without the help of his wife, Minnie. On the evening of September 8th, 1987, Minnie took a long hot soak in the bathtub. Love a self-care queen. Please take care of it.
Take care of yourself.
But when Minnie got out of the tub, she stepped in a red puddle. She said whatever it was very sticky, and it was bubbling up from under the tile floor right at her feet. She was confused more than she was scared. She couldn't tell what was going on. But when she made the connection that this liquid she was standing in looked like blood, she just started to run from the bathroom, shouting Willie's name, searching for any sign of him, thinking, like, my husband's hurt. There was blood everywhere, along the baseboards, smeared across the walls, in the carpet. She found Willie, and he was fine. He hadn't left his bed. But after searching the rest of the house, the red substance was in the hallways, the kitchen, the living room, one of the bedrooms, in the basement, and even in the house's crawl space.
How? Why?
The couple called 911 immediately, who dispatched the police and EMTs, but the EMTs had nothing to treat because both of the Winstons were inspected for injuries. They were fine. They weren't bleeding. No one else was in the house, and there was no evidence of a break-in that would have had to have happened in the hour or so Minnie was bathing and not heard by her or Willie. Like, they would have maybe heard something happening if someone had snuck in and done this. They had, their doors were locked. Their security alarm was set at 9:30 p.m. that evening. The alarm had not been tripped. The story gets even wilder because samples of the substance were sent off to the state crime lab and the results came back concluding the substance was blood. And the blood was of human origin. Why?
How though?
Why and how and when?
Oh.
The lab test also confirmed that the blood type was type O, but both Willie and Minnie had type A blood.
Okay.
The detective on the case, his name is Steve Cartwright. He was an investigator for a billion years. He told the Associated Press, "This is an extremely strange situation. I've been on the force at the time." He had been on the force for 10 years. And he said, "I have never seen anything like this. I don't know what to make of it." And the police had no leads whatsoever. The blood specialists, along with the officers who investigated the scene, agreed it wasn't a homicide. No one had died. They believed Willie and Minnie when they said they had no idea what was happening. And one of the cops that was on the scene, I think it was actually an EMT, but they witnessed the substance bubbling up from the floor in the bathroom. So, like, they witnessed it coming, like, flowing into the home.
Oh, it's so bizarre and creepy.
Naturally, this was a media circus. Just about ruined whatever peace the Winstons had left in their life. They were quoted frequently in news coverage from the time, expressing their frustration with the constant phone calls that would go on throughout the night. People showing up at their house, taking pictures of their house, knocking on their door, asking to come in and look at their house. There were reports of Minnie, like, shouting from her door, like, there's no blood in this house. Get away from here. And, like, I don't want anything to do with this. Leave me alone. Like, they were not attention seekers. They were attention. They did not want the attention. They were actually very upset with the attention. In fact, Minnie herself started calling the substance on the walls mud or rust and mud. At one point, she even called it red dye. At another point, she said it was contaminated water from leaky pipes, even though the tests said conclusively that it was type O human blood. She just, like, blocked it out. She was like, it wasn't blood. It just wasn't blood.
Well, because she's like, this couldn't have happened. It's not possible. Like, this is not tracking. Yeah, this is not
a thing.
So
in her head, I understand it didn't happen, which is crazy. Oof. But that leads me to believe the most popular theory anyone has ever had to this day was that it was a hoax is just not plausible. Like, why? And then what did they get out of it besides the worst things, like a bad life? Is what they got.
Yeah, exactly. Like, what were they winning? What was the victory? I don't understand.
Yeah, but still, there are skeptics that believe it was a total hoax. The Georgia Skeptics newsletter featured an examination of the case in 1994. And they said that after speaking with some investigators that worked on the case, they figured that family problems were the reason this all happened. They think that Minnie and Winston did this on their own to get attention from their children. They said that Willie could have had access to human blood due to his being a dialysis patient. Okay, like, I don't know if you know how hospitals work. Just because I'm getting treated for something doesn't mean I have access to their blood reserves.
No.
What are you talking about?
Like, how would he just be like, give me all the bags of blood? Like, that's not a thing.
The other theory they had was that one of the Winston's children did it. That one of them was a nurse or worked in a hospital. It just said worked in a hospital. That could be anything. That could be a janitor or a nurse. I don't know. But they worked in a hospital, so they had access to human blood. Maybe they did it to the house. And their theory as to why would be in order to have their parents legally declared incompetent for financial gain. But none of the children ever attempted to have either of their parents declared incompetent. So to me, that seems like a stretch. But
yeah, absolutely.
According to Skeptics 100%. Magazine, that's probably what was going on. But if no one broke into the house and did it, the Winstons didn't do it, the children didn't do it, the only thing left is a supernatural theory. And unfortunately, the thing is, there was a parapsychologist named William George Rowley Jr. who showed up at the house, came by multiple times to attempt to come in and investigate, but he was turned away every single time. Like I said, Minnie was like, I don't want anything to fucking do with this.
Yeah, like, get away from
No, thanks. Don't even want you looking at it. And according to the Winstons and the people that knew them, no other strange or paranormal activity took place in the house before or after it bled. So it's not like it amped up to this. This just fucking happened one night.
Out of nowhere. Damn.
Willie Winston passed away 2 years after that foggy Tuesday night. Minnie lived for freaking ever. She died at 104 years old in 2015.
All right.
It is totally unknown if there are still samples of this blood left to do more specific DNA testing today, or if anyone who had access to the samples would ever even bother to test it. It looks like the house is not for sale. I looked on Zillow, so someone does live in it now. Okay. and no further incidents of this kind have been reported at 1114 Fountain Drive.
So what the hell was going on? I don't understand. That is so strange.
The fact that there was no paranormal activity ramping up to this makes it even more weird. Because at least if weird shit was happening, you'd be like, well, it was fucking haunted.
And it's like well, yep, there you go.
Sometimes
like,
have you live
seen
in a haunted
Poltergeist?
House
this just feels right.
Fucking walls bleed.
Yeah, that's weird. And also that nobody else reported anything after. But also, I don't know how anyone would have pulled off this prank, why they would have pulled off this prank. Nobody had access to blood. Like, it doesn't add up that it could have been forced, but also what?
How?
Why?
So
why?
That's the story of the house that bled.
Well, good gravy. That's wild. Okay, well, I have no answers to that. That's just spooky as hell. And I want to go into a segment we haven't done in a while that I'm so excited about it, but it's always the issue of trying to remember how the song goes. Oh. Question.
Read all about it. Lauren's got a question, and we're going to talk about it. Do you think maybe the song isn't memorable because it makes no fucking sense, and I made it up on a whim the first time I did it, and there's a reason we can't remember how it goes.
It won't stick in my brain. Like, I'll remember the words to Cursed Crooners for the rest of my life. I'm going to get there. I like this question a lot. And I feel like it kind of feels in the same theme as the one I asked forever ago about our spouses and if we would help them or not in a crime. But if I got arrested and all that you heard was that I got arrested, but you didn't hear the details, what would be your immediate thought of why I got arrested?
Why you got arrested?
If you just heard Lauren Ogle got arrested, why? I haven't heard yet.
Holy
You'd be
shit.
Like, it's probably because
you don't do anything bad. Like, how am I supposed to answer this question?
Well, listen.
I could have told you what you would have gotten arrested for 10 years ago.
You can do that. What was youth Lauren going to be arrested for?
Youth Lauren would be arrested for drug possession or drunken disorderly.
Drunk in public for sure. Because I peed next to many a dumpster, many a stoop, stranger stoop.
I peed on myself.
I just straight peed on the floor of a bar.
On a date in public.
No.
But today would have to be, I would say, theft. I would say that because
I'm so poor.
You're never gonna get hired again. But I know that you have worked for some kind of fancy people.
That's true.
And so I'm thinking maybe you got arrested for stealing something from a fancy person house.
That's fair. I know my bandmates.
It would be really hard for me to resist.
My bandmates are all very wealthy, but also I've nannied for very wealthy people. I've taught music for very wealthy people. I know. And in some cases, I've been in some fancy bathrooms where
access.
I'm just like, I want to steal their lotion and soap that's nicer than anything I've ever owned.
You have access
that's
to
fair.
Fancy people things. And I think, look at this, by the way. Are you fucking kidding me?
Damn nail.
I want to kill myself. What about me? What would you think that I got arrested for?
It's a fair question because the way that you were frustrated about me, I felt about you right after. I was like, it's such a fun question. My sister and I talked about this one before, just the two of us. And I was like, it's so fun. But what would Ashley do? I have no idea. But I came up with, this is so specific, but this is how well I know you.
Oh my God.
It would be for burning down a health insurance office because they are denying you coverage for the things that you need.
Wow, yeah.
Or burning down a doctor's office after not listening to you for the thousandth time after you said that something is wrong. Because I feel like
you're listing my fantasies right now.
I know. where I'm like, you are such a good person. I don't see you committing a crime at all, if we're being honest. But I am just like, I think she could be pushed to the edge by how often doctors have not listened to her and how you've been mistreated and just not had the insurance coverage that you needed. So I could see you being pushed to your limits and being like, I'm in so much pain. I'm about to light my OB's office ablaze. And
what did Julia say for you?
For
that's
me,
a good answer, actually, because absolutely.
Yeah,
totally.
I know. I do think that. Oh, I also said rescuing cats from shitty owners who should not have pets. That was another one for you.
Yeah. Well, be a Dexter for bad cat owners.
My sister kind of did the same thing as you. She was like, I don't see you doing this now, but she was like, in her 20s, Lauren, if she was drunk, she said that I always was like fighting for justice when I was drunk, which I like forgot that this was a side of me, but she saw me at some of my worst, but she said that I would have like tried to punch someone in the face over like probably nothing. Fair. Like a guy like would have been in line for the bathroom and like kind of looked at me weird and I would have punched him in the face and gotten arrested. But so like drunk and disorderly.
And you would have been like, don't look at women in bars.
He was like, I'm gay. I don't even
I'm
care.
So sorry.
I know. Cause I was the queen of that. I remember I was out to dinner. Well, I don't remember. I was told the next day in a blackout at age like 22. And a girl spilled a drink on one of our friends. It's somebody that we worked on Glee with. She had spilled a drink and it was a total accident. But in my blackout, I was like, how dare you pour a drink on my friend? And I like yelled at this girl for a half hour because I was like fighting for justice. And our friend was like, oh my God, it was an accident. Oh, she knocked over the cup. Like, what did you see? So anyway, I do think drunken disorderly yelling
happened on Vanderpump Rules because Kristen Doty threw a drink on James Kennedy, but some of it got on Lala Kent and Lala
lost
freaked the fuck out
her
and was
mind.
Like, threw a drink on me. And she was like, no. I threw a drink on James.
I do remember that. Yep, I know.
Really get caught up on Vanderpump so that we can all enjoy these little tidbits.
Gosh, yeah. If you're not watching Vanderpump, what are you even doing?
What are you even doing? It's coming back in January. You have a month and a half to get caught up. That is all the time we have this week for Keep It Weird. Thank you so much for listening to our show. Don't forget, donate to our Patreon at www.patreon.com/keepitweirdpodcast. If you've got an extra $5 a month to spare, not only are you helping us financially, you're helping us move forward and towards our goal of not having to work shitty day jobs on top of producing this show. You're also improving our mental health, apparently.
Truly.
And also, this is a note that someone said to me recently that I had never thought of. If you think you're a patron of our show, but you got a new credit card recently.
Ah, yes.
You're not a patron of our show anymore. Mm-mm. So make sure to check and that your payment, you know, option is up.
I've seen a few people say that of like, oh my gosh, I never changed my card over. So yeah, check it out.
It's happened to us before where it's like, I never changed my card when I got it updated. Yep. I didn't even realize I wasn't a patron anymore. I haven't been a patron for 5 months. I'm so sorry. So check on your credit cards just in case. Follow us on social media at Keep It Weirdcast. We just finished Tarot Tuesday, where we taught you guys the meaning behind every single
card.
Tarot card.
So it was brilliant.
If you wanted to learn how to read tarot, you can't say we never taught you. Mm-hmm. We did.
Sorry about
it. We taught you every card. We'll still be posting occasionally like tarot tips and tricks on Tuesdays. Obviously, you should still follow Busy Bee Coven at Busy Bee Coven, our tarot queen for daily tarot content. And we still do Witchy Wednesdays with Leaves and Lore, which is run by our official Green Witch, Laura LaRue. So follow her as well if you want more witchy content. And last but not least, we are planning a very Witchmas Christmas with Laura this December.
Witchmas Christmas.
Where we will be breaking down a ton of Yule traditions and ways you can add some real magic to your holidays. So if you have any witch, Yule, or general holiday related questions for us to read on the show, send them to keepitweirdpodcast@gmail.com or hello, leave us a voicemail at 626-686-1821. As with every holiday season, you might see some episodes a day later or a day earlier, depending on the week. For example, like next week, the episode's probably kind of come out on Saturday instead of Thursday, since Thursday's Thanksgiving. I'm not going to be able to edit, et cetera, et cetera. So if you want day-to-day deets on episode updates, follow us on social media and we'll keep you updated when the holiday time eps will be out. Our season 7 finale is set to air on December 22nd.
Right before Christmas.
To end our show, do we want to practice a little bibliomancy?
Sure.
Or try to guess a Zener card?
Oh my gosh, well, I like both.
Well, we'll do Zener. Do you have a good question for a bibliomancy?
No.
Maybe we'll have to think about that. We'll do that next week.
Okay.
Next week, we'll do a bibliomancy. Today, we're going to try and guess the Zener card. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do it a little differently. Okay. So that one of us isn't in the hot seat. We're both going to try and guess the card. I'm shuffling the deck. I'll show the listeners. I'll show the viewers so they know what the card is.
Okay. So should we close our eyes? Yes.
Close your eyes.
Okay.
Don't look. Ready?
Ready.
I mean, don't look. Okay. I showed the listeners the card.
Okay.
Now, we are going to try and guess what it is. I think it's a square.
I was seeing a window, which is always our like cursed shape, though, because then it
because
like
it could
goes
be a plus sign. Okay, I hold know, on. Let me.
This is why I hate the fucking window, because it does this to us. But that was like what kept flashing, and I was like, Lauren, no, window's not a thing.
Let's see. Do you think it's a plus sign or a square? What if it's a squiggly line and we're wrong about both? Hey! You nailed it.
I feel like it's the first time. Okay, the reason I am losing my mind is because I feel like that sign has like screwed us so many times. It was the first time I listened to my gut of like, but window. Oh. Okay.
Does it count? Who knows?
Who knows? You tell us.
You tell us. Leave us a voicemail. 626. Just kidding. We love you guys. We will see you in a week.
Keep it weird.
Did you know that most vitamin D3 supplements come from sheep's wool? I'm Kat, founder of Ritual. We're making traceability the new standard for the supplement industry. When I was pregnant, I couldn't find a multivitamin I could trust, so I created my own. Ours is made traceable, third-party tested, and clean label project certified. Oh, and our vitamin D3? It comes from sustainably harvested lichen from England, not sheep. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at caskers.com.